And along that lines, the first set of questions is directed to the Site Evaluation Committee. And the first one's actually, I will answer it. Will the moderator please ensure that questions are answered directly and succinctly? The answer is yes. Mr. Quinlan, I'm going to ask that you and your staff please answer the questions directly and succinctly. And will the moderator please ensure that that the expert answering the question is interrupted if they are not answering the question asked? The answer is no. Usually, if somebody's answering the question, I'm going to allow them to finish their answer. And the record will speak to whether or not they answered the question or not. And that record is reviewed by the Site Evaluation Committee. Next question for the Site Evaluation Committee is, how can the Site Evaluation Committee countenance towers and still meet the obligation of preserving environmental values according to RSA 162H? I can't answer that question because I don't know what the evidence is in the case, and I don't sit on the Site Evaluation Committee. Each member of the Site Evaluation Committee is entrusted with that obligation and that responsibility, and they will carry out that responsibility. Coos County has once again been labeled the poorest county in the state. Will the Site Evaluation Committee consider this in their process? We need jobs that will keep the people from leaving. Yes, the Site Evaluation Committee will consider the economic consequences, the orderly development of the region, and all of those issues that I went through at the end of my presentation. And I invite everybody to take a look at previous decisions from the Site Evaluation Committee on our website, and you'll see examples of how they go about doing that. And if you want to see examples each way, by the way, you can find examples of where they've granted certificates and where they've denied certificates. This next question, I guess, is to me. Once you have accepted payment to represent Northern Pass in any capacity, don't you then give up your rights to speak as a private citizen at meetings? It seems that once you accept payment of any sort, you are an employee and can no longer speak as a private citizen. Please clarify. Everybody, even employees of Eversource, have First Amendment rights and have the right to speak at these proceedings, just as any other member of the public does. So no, they don't give up their rights. Somebody doesn't give up their rights to speak their mind due to their employment. Okay, this next question is about intervening. If you don't bring up an issue in your letter requesting intervener status, can it be brought up later as possible new information comes forward? There is a process in our rules and in the statute whereby you can file a request to intervene late. I would recommend that you look at the rules and at the statutes in order to do that. I can't give legal advice to folks here, but there is a process if you're late to request intervention status. However, our intervention deadline has not yet passed. It's February 5th, so if anybody were to file between now and then, you'd still be on time and you don't have to worry about that. Next question is, how many proposed utility projects have not received approval from the Site Evaluation Committee over the past 10 years? What criteria were key factors in denying projects? The Antrim Wind project filed in 2014 was denied a certificate. The key factor, there were several factors in that, but the key one, and at least the one that got reported the most, was the concern about aesthetics of those particular wind towers. There have been no other applications for certificates that have been denied. However, jurisdiction has been denied in a couple of cases, which essentially meant the end of the project. There was a proposed wind facility called the Timbertop facility, which went off the table because the Site Evaluation Committee would not take jurisdiction. There's also the Wild Meadows wind project that was proposed that the Site Evaluation Committee did not accept their application because they didn't think it was complete, and that project never came back to the Site Evaluation Committee either. Does the Site Evaluation Committee feel that HVDC towers and wires above the trees are aesthetically okay for New Hampshire residents? That's a determination that the Site Evaluation Committee will make based upon the individual circumstances in each docket, including this one. How can the SEC move forward when there is litigation pending regarding rights of way? Rights of way and that litigation involve the individual rights of individual citizens, and those rights are determined in courts of law. There's no impediment to the Site Evaluation Committee moving forward unless we receive an order from a court telling us that we cannot do so. Okay, the next question is really about taxes, so we're going to put that in the economic pile. The next question is about SEC processes as well. After the SEC reaches their decision of the siting of this project, can their decision be challenged by the applicant? Yes. And it can be challenged by counsel for the public. It can be challenged by any intervener or any other person who has what lawyers call standing in the proceeding. In other words, they have an interest in the proceeding. This next question involves the SEC and involves a project, I think, that was from the late 1980s. I'm not quite sure of the dates, but looking at the Site Evaluation Committee website on past projects when transmission lines were changed from 80 foot to towers of 115 feet from Monroe to Ayer, Mass., specifically Warren, New Hampshire, the Site Evaluation Committee found no problem with these tall towers. Does this mean the Site Evaluation Committee views these towers as aesthetically pleasing? And then the questioner quotes, I think, from that particular decision, "We find that the aesthetic impacts of the proposed Phase 2 facility will be minimal and would not have an unreasonable adverse effect." The answer to the question is that the Site Evaluation Committee will determine whether or not there is an unreasonable adverse impact on aesthetics after they consider all of the evidence in this docket. Because they approved a certain tower height in another docket on another project does not mean that they are bound to do the same thing in this particular case. Okay, this next question is from an abutter. "There is a parcel of land that abuts the existing substation located in Deerfield. A large portion of this property is also in Nottingham. Has an abutting community, and since Nottingham is likely to have similar concerns as Deerfield regarding the proposed expansion of the substation as it relates to issues such as emergency response, homeland security, noise, lighting, etc., how would I locate the rules and procedures for properly notifying landowners and municipalities to ensure that Nottingham has been properly noticed?" It's the same as I went over in the presentation. Municipalities can move to intervene in these proceedings. They should do so by February 5th. Nottingham, if it's select board or planning board or whoever the municipal governing body is, determines that they want to intervene, they would file a motion just like anybody else. And there are rules. Those rules are on our website. I can't quote for you. I believe it's 301.11. Is the rule for intervention. You should also look at RSA 541A, section 32, which involves intervention in administrative proceedings. This next questioner has a number of questions, two of which appear to relate to the SEC process, and the rest of them I'm just going to put under the questions with regard to burial of the project. The first one is, how will the SEC eliminate the economic injustice created by the adjudicatory nature of its proceedings? As it stands now, the immense disparity in financial and legal resources between the applicant and interveners completely perverts the process. Can the public counsel order expert witness testimony on behalf of the public? Can the public counsel order as much expert testimony of the same quality as that submitted by the applicant? The questions are what can public counsel do. I'll remind you that the statutory process is created by the legislature. It's not created, the Site Evaluation Committee did not create this process, the legislature did. So the legislature apparently determined that it was a just process. Counsel for the public has all of the same rights as a party in any formal proceeding. He can hire witnesses and he will make a determination as to the quality of the witnesses that he chooses to hire, and I'm sure he will hire good ones. He always has. And counsel for the public routinely hires expert witnesses in applications for certificates of site and facility. The next one is two former members of the Site Evaluation Committee, Tom Getz and Dana Bisbee, are now representing Northern Pass. They both served on the SEC with present member Catherine Bailey, and Mr. Getz served also with present member Martin Honigberg. How is the public to maintain faith in the objectivity of the site evaluation given this situation? I'm not sure whether Mr. Getz or Mr. Bisbee ever served with Chairman Honigberg, and I'm not sure whether they sat on a committee with Commissioner Bailey. But the question is, how is the public to maintain faith in the objectivity? Is they have the sworn duty to carry out this as part of their job that's been given to them by the legislature. It's the same way that that you can rely in good faith on other public servants, whether it be the folks who issue air permits, wetlands permits, whether it's your state representatives in Concord. The site evaluation committees work very hard, and they know when they're allowed to speak and when they're not allowed to speak, and who they're allowed to speak with. Next question is for me. Why in this informational meeting do you have only the project proponent with you at the podium and allowed to make a video presentation? Clearly, the project proponent is only to present one point of view, and many of their claims have already been discredited. This does not provide complete public information. There are other well-informed groups that should have been invited to provide alternate views and information and videos. Is the SEC not interested in these alternate views and information? Does the SEC not consider it important to provide a well-rounded set of information to the public in these public information sessions? The reason why the applicant is permitted at these proceedings to make a presentation to you is because the legislature has deemed that that's the appropriate way for these public information sessions to be held. They're specifically required to under the statute. It's not a determination whether anybody is correct or incorrect. It's not it has nothing to do with the correctness or incorrectness of any other organization or any person with a different view. It's a public information session where information is supposed to be provided to the public, and the applicant is required to do that. Any organization, if they have a view on this, can participate in many of the same ways that I went through in the presentation, including and up to moving to intervene. Where they will participate at the adjudicatory phase of the proceedings. Okay, I think that's all the questions I had for Site Evaluation Committee.